KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Deliberation and passion, these are qualities that Sarah Pauley has brought to the screen as an actress. She's also bringing them to the screen as a director with her feature film debut as a director, Away From Her, starring Julie Christie. She's my guest. Sarah, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us a little bit what the movie's about.
Well, the movie is a portrait of a marriage. Julie Christie's character, Fiona, is married to Gordon Pinson's character, Grant, and begins to exhibit symptoms of Alzheimer's disease and is compelled to go and live in a retirement home. And the film really focuses on the unraveling of their marriage and an examination of a kind of unconditional love that Grant becomes capable of.
Now, it stars Julie Christie, with whom you worked in No Such Thing. What was your first contact with her like?
She's somebody who I'd always idolized and had looked up to, you know, my whole life, both for her acting but also her political activism. And we really hit it off when we met, and she became a very good friend and a great support to me as I was making, you know, my short films. And when I read this short story by Alice Munro, which was originally called The Bear Came Over the Mountain, I immediately knew that I had to cast Julie in this part, and that, in fact, I wanted to make the film to see her play this role.
Yeah, but she doesn't like to see herself play too many roles, though, does she?
No, she's not the most ambitious of actors. But, you know, she's had such an incredible career. I think, you know, she's just at a, you know, time in her life where it's not the first thing in her mind to go out and find a leading role for herself to play. So it took some convincing to get her to take on a part this big.
You must feel in some ways like her career is quite similar to hers, and that she does what she wants to do when she wants to do it and is very specific about it.
I mean, she's definitely an inspiration to me. At the same time, I feel like the decisions she's had to make have been, you know, on a scale that, you know, I'll never, you know, have to deal with or imagine. I mean, to be, you know, the biggest sex symbol of your time and decide to focus on, you know, smaller independent films and political activism is a much bigger and more difficult choice, I think, than anything I've ever had to face. But she's certainly somebody who I admire greatly and look up to.
And also the kind of emotional life that the directors you worked with, like Michael Winterbottom and Adam McGoyan, the kind of things that they want to do are the kind of things that you're attracted to as a performer, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that I'm much more interested in the kinds of things that independent filmmakers are talking about, and the idea of using film as a way of discussing ideas and creating a dialogue. And that's certainly something that I've had the privilege to work with a lot of filmmakers that approach film in that way.
It's interesting, though, because those first shots of Julie Christie coming across the tundra, you can't help but think of Dr. Zhivago a little bit when one sees them.
No, absolutely. And for me, too. I mean, I'm a huge Julie Christie fan, and Dr. Zhivago was a film I watched every New Year's Day for a long time. It was a tradition. So I'm certainly not oblivious to those references.
Every New Year's Day?
Yeah, it was a weird sort of way to start the year for me for a long time. And then Julie convinced me to stop. She convinced me that it was actually based on quite a reactionary book, so I stopped.
An incredibly reactionary book, in a book about people being trapped in their lives. But what did you see in Dr. Zhivago personally?
I don't know. It just sort of got me, you know. It just, there's something where it just transported me every time I watched it. And, you know, very few movies can do that. And with Dr. Zhivago, it's, you know, it's not easy really to explain how or why that happened, but I think that time also in Russian history is something that I've just always been really fascinated by. So,
but it's a really romantic movie in a capital R kind of way, Byronic way too, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's a complicated, you know, love story, and it's full of ethical questions and, you know, testing morality in ways that I think, you know, was very, very daring. So I think it's interesting that people think of it as such a romantic movie and it in a sort of typical mainstream way, and yet it really tests boundaries, I think.
It's The Treatment, my guess, is actress, now director, Sarah Pauley. Her first film as a feature director is Away From Her. I wonder, because of the kind of experience you bring to Julie Christie as an actress, what it was like for you with her as a director?
Well, it was kind of amazing. I mean, she was a good friend, and I'd worked with her as an actor. But of course, I was very intimidated to be directing, you know, somebody who, you know, has that much experience and who I looked up to so much. But, you know, Julie really made it her mission to make me comfortable with being the filmmaker and being the director. And, you know, she's worked with incredibly strong filmmakers. So for her, it's all about what the filmmaker's vision is and getting to know what that is and how she can accommodate it. And what a privilege that was, you know, on a first film to have an actress like that take so much to heart what you were looking for and force you to really be able to articulate that well. It was a great lesson for me.
What's fascinating to me about this film, as sort of compared to your shorts, is the way you dwell on faces a lot as a way of sort of communicating the emotional import of the movie. And I wonder when that came to you, to use the faces of these characters who aren't saying a lot in a lot of cases, or saying things that are kind of contrary to what it is we should feel about them, when you decided to use that as your approach.
I think it was based on the actors I cast. I mean, with people like Olympia Dukakis and Gordon Pinsent and Julie Christie, it was, and Michael Murphy. I mean, you do just want to stare at their faces. And I think it was, you know, me sort of indulging what I wanted to see as I was watching them play these scenes. I just wanted to get closer and closer and really linger. And what they were doing was so subtle and finely nuanced and layered that it seemed like, I didn't want to miss a beat of it.
It's fascinating, too, because you basically cast a group of actors who've been at this for quite a long time and have to be very confident about what it is they have to offer to you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I was lucky enough to get the actors in each role that I wrote these parts for. So, you know, that was a huge step up, you know, a huge advantage, I think, to sort of have envisioned these people all along.
It's also a piece of material, too, that really is about, the more we learn about it, the more regret that the film is tinged with, for at least for us as an audience. And I wondered if that was what kind of attracted you to the short story, which is kind of close to that, but is really more about guilt than regret.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I think that it was interesting to me to play with the idea of somebody, you know, dealing with their past and reanalyzing and reassessing their behavior from decades before. As it becomes kind of relevant in the context of this story, Fiona's character begins to very vividly remember a time when Grant was not always the ideal husband. And seeing him grappling with his own role as a husband in the past, and also, I think, you know, attaining this ability to be sort of who he was never able to be as a husband, you know, at the end of their marriage. And that was really fascinating to me in terms of, you know, how guilt and memory play this integral part in the relationships that we have.
I guess when I read the story, though, afterwards, I wonder, and I have to ask you this, where you saw the movie in it, or what made you see a movie in it, because you do sort of break it and restructure it. Mm-hmm. And certainly the emotional import and the emotional momentum are all still there. But it had a kind of, again, it was built around guilt in a way that your movie is not.
Mm. It's funny because, I think it's so odd to adapt a piece of fiction, because reading fiction is such a solitary experience, and we can never know if our experience of a story is the same as, you know, as somebody who's also reading the same story. So for me, the film was incredibly obvious, and it was really not an arduous process to adapt it. But I know for other people, it sort of seems like really difficult to see where the film lay in the story. In my mind, the film is actually incredibly faithful to Alice Munro's short story. But I don't know if anyone else feels that way, or even if she would feel that way. So no idea.
It's such a tangle to pull all these elements apart in the short story. And you lay it out in a way that's very clear, and almost basically you take what's kind of the emotional climax and set it at the beginning of the movie.
Right. I think in a way, you know, for me, the process of adapting a short story was, you know, making a film that was an expression of my experience and the thoughts that I had and the emotions that I had reading this story, so that it's sort of once removed, I suppose, from the story. And it's more an expression of how I, you know, what I got from it, as opposed to, you know, what it actually is. And yeah, I mean, that was a big decision to sort of like, you know, show that we are going to go to this very unexpected place quite early in the film and give it a nonlinear structure. And I suppose that was also the idea of, you know, mirroring the fragmentation of memory, which is something that gets dealt with in the film, in the structure of the film.
It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest is actress and director Sarah Polley. Her film is Away From Her. You're talking about this fragmentary thing, which is really kind of taking us into the sort of the emotional course of Alzheimer's, isn't it?
No, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that it was important for me to sort of like allude to that as much as possible in the film because, you know, ultimately I feel like the film isn't about Alzheimer's disease. It is a portrait of this marriage and it is a study of love. So the more I could sort of talk about Alzheimer's through metaphor and light and structure, I think, you know, that I felt sort of better talking about it in that way than directly.
Does that make Adam Egoyan kind of an influence for you because he does something not dissimilar to that in the way that he structures stories are based on these triggers that set off feelings and emotions and memories?
He's been a huge influence on me, and I think, in fact, I really, you know, fell in love with the idea of making films, you know, through working with him. And I think, you know, the idea of a nonlinear structure is really in my blood. I mean, in a way, that's, you know, my introduction into film was through his films, which are always nonlinear. So I think it would have been very hard for me, actually, for a first film to make a linear traditional film.
He's somebody who goes back and forth from originals to adaptations, you know, for Exotica for you, to Sweet Hereafter, the films he did with you. Are you more comfortable working in adaptation, or does it make you a difference at all in terms of adapting or writing something?
I'm not sure. I mean, most of my short films were original, and I always assumed that all of my features would be original. And it was a surprise to me, actually, that I really wanted to adapt this short story. So I would hope that it would be a combination of the two, because I did love the process of, you know, working with a story that you love as much as I loved Alice Munro's story.
But is sort of tending to what it is that you fell in love with in the material a good thing to do as a first-time director? That sounds to me kind of daunting.
It is. And I think, you know, there was actually a few years where I thought, you know what, I just shouldn't option this story. It doesn't matter how much I, you know, can see this film in it and how much I want to make it. You know, I don't want to wreck something that I love this much. And I think that, you know, we should all have those moments of pause before we tinker with the things that, you know, are kind of perfect on their own. So, yes, it was daunting. And at the same time, I knew that this film should be quite true to the story. And so there wasn't this sense that I was going to kind of rip it apart. There was a sense of trying as much as I could to honor and be faithful to the story. Now, I don't think that's always a good approach when adapting a film. It happened to sort of work, I think, with this one to stay quite true to the story. But that was sort of a nice thing to be able to just walk around inside the story that I loved so much.
But those kind of emotional fragmentations that Egoyan does, which are very close to Borges, I wonder if that kind of sense of thinking you know a situation and not knowing it was also something you really wanted to tackle as a director at some point in your career, and this just happened to be the best way to get to it.
It was definitely something that was captivating to me about the story and the intense ambiguity around, you know, there are moments where, you know, I think Grant feels, you know, when Fiona moves into this retirement home, she falls in love with another resident in the retirement home. And there are definitely moments where Grant wonders if she is punishing him somehow for his past infidelities and for the pain that he caused her during their marriage. And we see the film very much through his eyes. Ultimately, it's not my opinion that she's pretending. I think she has Alzheimer's disease. But I do think there are moments where she has a very vivid emotional anger towards him. But there are moments where, you know, I've, you know, certainly had people ask me, you know, is she pretending? Is she punishing him? Is it real? And I think that those ambiguities are really what makes this story so interesting. And what I loved about reading the short story was that I was left with so many questions. And I think we've sort of, it's very difficult in film now to not answer all the questions, especially when you're trying to get a film financed. So I was happy to be able to leave those ambiguities in.
It's The Treatment. My guest is Sarah Polley. Her first film as director is Away From Her. We'll take a break. More after this.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
is the treatment of Elvis Mitchell. We're talking about ambiguity with actress and director Sarah Polley. Her first film as director is Away From Her. I guess, though, what really strikes me about the film, and having seen it a couple of times now, is that it feels almost like a musical piece to me in the way the rhythms come and go. Mm-hmm. And it makes me wonder if, as a filmmaker, there are pieces of music you listen to or composers that mean something to you that you use to set up these rhythms, because they're very tricky and allusional and kind of move back and forth in terms of setting that emotional pace that you're talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, and some of the music that I listened to while writing the script ended up in the film. There's a couple of Neil Young tracks, one sung by Katie Lang and one Harvest Moon sung by Neil himself, and some pieces by Bach that we were using. And to me, I can't imagine writing without music. It seems like really integral to the process. And then Jonathan Goldsmith was the composer on the film, who did this incredible job of somehow marrying these incredibly disparate elements of Bach and Neil Young into a score. And yeah, I mean, I think it's hugely important, and really I'm very involved in the idea of, you know, the music and the soundtrack from the very beginning of conceiving the film. And actually our idea on, you know, our next film is that he'll actually write the score before I write the script, so that it's like getting more and more sort of like further up in the process.
What made you decide to do that?
Because I feel like what I write is so informed by the music I'm listening to. It just feels like, you know, why not sort of use the actual music you're going to be using and like collaborate on that with somebody? It just seemed like kind of an interesting idea to sort of like move that part of the process up. It always feels like it's something that should never be tacked on at the end, that it should sort of like move and inform the rhythm of the film.
Those rhythms, though, are so key to this that music feels like it was an informing influence on you. And I wonder if in the other filmmakers you worked with, if you've talked to them and they've told you about music, because I know that Michael Dana is very important to to Egoyan. They talk a lot even before they start to work. And I wonder if that too was a way, or this just sort of came to you as you were starting to make the picture.
I mean, I guess music's always been really important to me, you know, period, and has always been sort of like a main motivating force behind everything I've, you know, sort of attempted to write. I think that most of the filmmakers that I've worked with who I've really looked up to and respected, like Isabel Coixet or Wim Wenders or, you know, Adam, you know, they all have, you know, music in their heads well before they start, and that's really informed their process. So that's quite possibly something I've picked up from them.
Well, it's interesting, too, because the music goes from being contemplative to declamatory, I think. And when things need to be said, the music actually is contemplative and leads us to sort of lean in and pay more attention. And is this the way that you structured it as well? Because it's really curious to me to hear a first film that's so confident in terms of the way music is used and not trying to make us think something, but to actually pull us into the story.
I think a lot of that was Jonathan Goldsmith's influence. I think he's, you know, one of the best composers out there. And he's somebody who never overuses music. And in fact, like probably one of the only composers who encourages you to use less cues. But he was so sort of like focused on the characters and so, you know, trying to not communicate what was already on screen. I would have to sort of credit with him with, you know, in terms of the score, figuring out those moments and finding moments I would have never thought of. So.
It's the treatment, my guess, is Sarah Polley. We're talking about her first film as director, Away From Her. It makes me wonder, too, just because this is so much a film, too, about loss and wondering what about questions that should have been asked, which is also kind of something that runs through your films, too, even the shorts. There are questions that should have been asked at a certain point that haven't been, and now the protagonists have to live with not having asked those questions when they were pertinent. Mm. And I wonder how much that comes from your personal life.
Mm, it's interesting. I mean, I think that, you know, I've certainly, you know, from a very early age had the experience of people dying, you know, and that's, you know, death has been a very big part of my life. It's not something that, you know, I have no experience with. So I think that probably is something that has quite a bit of resonance for me, the idea of missing moments with people, wondering if you've done enough, wondering who you were with them and who you can be now. I think that was a theme in the film, in the story, that certainly caught my attention. I think it's strange, you know, when you do something like make a film, I think your heart kind of hides things from you in terms of why you're doing it. And you can come up with reasons of, you know, why this story is important to you and why you had to tell it. And you're probably scratching the surface of, you know, the real reasons why you approach something. And I think it can be years later before you actually find out what you were talking about or what you were dealing with.
Well, what's it like for you to see the movie now, having gotten through the process and seeing it with audiences?
I mean, it's an amazing experience. And, you know, I think I was so happy and grateful that somebody gave me money to make a film that I kind of forgot that then people see it one day. Like, I sort of forgot there was this whole other part of the process where then people see it and react to it. So it all just feels like this big bonus to me and this kind of really shiny toy that now I get to talk to people about it. And it's interesting because, you know, it's something you cared enough about to work on for 2 years of your life. It certainly doesn't feel burdensome to kind of have this process of talking to interesting people about what they got from it. So it's been amazing. It's been really excellent. And, you know, having people explain things in the film to you that you actually didn't understand, you know, yourself, even though you did them, has been an amazing process.
Has that happened a lot?
It's happened a few times, yeah. I think Sam Shepard always talks about sort of writing does in a way come from your subconscious. It's not necessarily something you could explain. I don't think he'd use the word subconscious, but anyway. But I think that for me, that's true, you know, that it comes from a place that you don't fully understand yet. And if you did, it probably wouldn't be worth making. So it's a strange culture, I think, in terms of making films, because so many of your meetings with financiers and trying to get a film made requires you to explain what you're doing and answer every question about every character. And in fact, if you knew those things and were able to articulate them fully, it probably would be a kind of stale, dead thing that shouldn't be made. So it's always, I think, a really delicate balance of, you know, being able to communicate clearly and also not explaining too much to yourself.
Well, how did you explain it to the financiers now that you bring it up?
Well, I mean, I think fairly honestly. I mean, I think at its core, this is actually a love story. And it is about unconditional love and about, you know, being able to become who you always wanted to be. I mean, it's funny because, you know, I've been calling it a love story, but in fact, I remember there was a moment when we were shooting where Gordon Pinson and I realized, no, this is actually, you know, this is a coming of age story about a 77-year-old man. Like, this is about somebody finding out what they're made of and discovering what they're capable of in a way that they never did before. So I think it's, you know, it's a lot of things, but I think in terms of selling the film, at the beginning, it was really talking about the love story. And, you know, a lot of these people who are, you know, financing the film at, you know, Telefilm Canada or other organizations had actually had experience with Alzheimer's disease in their families. So they felt, you know, on that level, an urgency to see the film made.
But to make that element, that her disease more of a part of the theme, but actually more of the drama, is a really interesting choice to make because it's not so big a part of the short story.
Well, I mean, I think it's something that really serves as a metaphor in the film in many ways, you know, a metaphor for the memory of a relationship and things that have healed and things that become unscabbed. And I think that that's, you know, one of the real tragedies of that disease is, of course, the forgetting is tragic, but also this moment that Julie Christie's character goes through where she, you know, remembers a moment of grief from 20 or 30 or 40 years ago and gets stuck in it. And, you know, a wound that's healed long ago all of a sudden becomes very, very present and real. And I thought that was, you know, a really interesting part of the disease to focus on.
His character, Grant, in the book is a guy of kind of enormous verbal gifts. Mm. And you chose to make him somebody who doesn't talk a whole lot. And when he does, he's asking questions.
I was interested in telling a story about an observer and about a listener. And I feel like, you know, these are characters I don't feel like I see enough in films. You know, it's like we forget that I think real charisma doesn't come from the person who's, you know, the most impressive or the life of the party or to me, real charisma is, you know, someone like Gordon really absorbing what's going on around him and taking stock of it and being empathetic and generous. And so that's sort of the part of that character that I was really in love with. And also somebody that's flawed, you know, fundamentally flawed and who hasn't been perfect by any stretch of the imagination and who hasn't been moral or ethical his entire life, and to sort of like pay homage to that kind of person, you know, learning and a kind of empathy.
It's the treatment, I guess, of Sarah Polley. We're talking about her first film as director, Away From Her. It's also a film, too, that takes place in scenes with just a couple of people often. And that's really a test of you as a director. I mean, you seemed like you went out of your way to make this as hard for yourself as humanly possible in the first film. What is this hair shirt that you wear, Sarah Polley? Tell us about that.
I mean, it was definitely, I do remember, like, there was this, the first day of rehearsal when the actors were all of a sudden coming in for rehearsal. And, you know, it just seemed like such a pipe dream to get this film made and, you know, and to get these actors in it. And it just seemed so unrealistic. So you can quite confidently go ahead and try to put together a movie like this when you're feeling like it's a pipe dream. And then all of a sudden when they're actually seeing the travel memos go by and they're showing up, it was sort of like, oh my God, what have I done? I'm directing Julie Christine, Olympia Dukakis. Like, what kind of rocket scientist came up with this for me? So it did feel, you know, it was daunting. And, you know, in many ways, the film is small and very, very contained. But it also was, you know, very complex and obviously dealing with a subject matter in a time of life that's very distant from my own experience. So it was magnificently challenging, but it was also unbelievably rewarding, and I had so much amazing support.
I guess so, hearing you talk about David Lane, I wonder if there are many of his films that you had seen, that because they're in a lot of ways too about these kind of emotional mysteries that we're talking about. In fact, Dr. Zhivago is so mysterious, I'm still not quite sure that I understand it. But a lot of his films too are about pulling these kinds of things apart. And I wonder if he's somebody you've turned to as a filmmaker, if you're a fan of his work.
You know, he's not somebody I would have ever thought of as being an influence. And, you know, his films are on such a scale that I think that it would be very hard for me to sort of like imagine making films like those. But, you know, certainly filmmakers like Terrence Malick or Bergman or Kieslowski would be filmmakers who have probably influenced me a lot more, or, you know, ones that I love.
How did Kieslowski influence you?
I think the patience he has with his characters and the complexity he allows them to have and the way they challenge each other. I don't know. I'm completely transported when I watch his films, and I feel like on some sort of very unexplainable level, I feel like I understand just a tiny bit more about human nature every time I see one of his films.
Well, all these directors we're talking about tend to use silence a lot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Which I think is, you know, something that I think as a moviegoer, something I'm always so happy to see is just, you know, great actors in silence is something that, you know, I think I always look forward to.
What was the first time that happened for you and you sort of realized you had to really rely on your gifts to communicate without talking? When were you first conscious of that in a film that you were working on as a performer, as an actress?
Mm-hmm. I think with Adam McGuigan, and I think it was the first time I'd worked with someone who allowed you that room and that space and that kind of safe environment and intimacy where you actually find yourself thinking and discovering new things in your own mind while a camera is on you, like where it's actually not a performance anymore. You're sort of engaging in some kind of relationship with yourself that you've never had. And that was, for me, working with him, the first time I really thought, wow, I think this is something I want to do with my life. I mean, I can't imagine a better job.
Well, I can't imagine a better person to talk to. Thank you so much
for doing this.
Please make another movie so you can come back. I don't care, actress, composer, whatever you need to come
back.
I would.
I'd love to.
Okay, thank you. My guest is Sarah Pauly. Her first film as director is Away From Her. Our technical director at KCRW in Santa Monica is Mario Diaz, with assistance from Lashik Wojcik at Carnegie Recording Studios. Bob Carlson is the editor, Gemma Dempsey the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.